This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Pop quiz. If you're on a spaceship traveling to the asteroid belt and you need to change course, no big deal, right? You just turn your little steering wheel and your ship turns. Well, that may be the case for something like Star Trek, but in sci-fi's The Expanse, it's a bit more dramatic.
If we flip right now and burn like hell, I can get us within 50,000 clicks.
Oh, great. Then we'll all be puking in our crash couches while the cargo busts loose and scuttles the ship.
Make sure that ice stays put.
This is Holden. We've logged a distress call near CA-221-6862.
We're obliged to change our course and respond. Make sure your acceleration drug dispensers are full. This will be a high G maneuver. Prepare for flip and burn.
Acceleration drug dispensers. You don't hear that anywhere else, and The Expanse has it. It takes place in the early days of our hypothetical voyage to the solar system. In the sci-fi thriller, we have colonized Mars, we're mining the asteroid belt for ice and minerals, and we don't have artificial gravity or instantaneous communication or even world peace like we might have in other science fiction films. It's imperfect, it's more realistic, and it's based on science. And we're going to talk about it now with two of the minds that helped bring it to us and help bring The Expanse to life. And if you haven't been watching season two, by the way, be ready for some spoilers, but it's worth it. It'll be worth it. My guests are Niran Shankar, executive producer and showrunner for The Expanse. He also has a PhD in applied physics and electrical engineering, and Ty Frank, producer for the show and co-author of the book series it's based on, Orbit Books. And if you're a fan of how the future is envisioned in The Expanse, you have questions for us. Our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK, or you can tweet us at SciFry. Gentlemen, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello. Hi.
Hey there. Ty, as author of the book, set the scene for our listeners who haven't seen this show. We've colonized Mars. We're mining the asteroid belts. One thing that's interesting is that we don't know what year this is happening in, and I imagine you've done that on purpose.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely deliberate. The minute you put a year on things, people start counting backwards and figuring out when all the various things would have had to happen to set that up. And the other thing that they do is they go and they find their astronomy app and they figure out the relative positions of all the solar system bodies at the date you claim things are happening, and then they start doing the math to see if your ship travel times are right.
People are that geeky about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. They are.
Let's talk a little bit about what the clip that we heard, Noreen. In the very first episode of the show, we see one of the implications of the real physics, a spaceship that has to essentially flip over to change course. I mean, and I've never seen navigation like this so dramatic on TV or so realistic.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that's happened when you see so much science fiction and television and movies, is everything's, I think, traditionally was modeled over, World War II fighter engagements in the Pacific. And so everybody thinks that spacecrafts, change direction like planes do. In reality, of course, a rocket only works in one direction. So if you're speeding up one way, in order to slow down, you've got to point the rocket in the other direction. And I think that was The Expanse was probably the first time that anybody made an action sequence out of a ship just making a turn.
Mm-hmm. And Ty, why can't we have in our spaceships artificial gravity or warp speed like we do on the other shows?
Well, in the books, it was a conscious decision not to do those things because we wanted to have that sort of realistic near future feel. And one of the things that always bugged me on other shows is they'd have artificial gravity, and the only thing anyone ever uses that for is so that they can walk around in their spaceships. Whereas if you have the ability to create gravity fields out of nothing, that is literally a humanity-changing technology that should have effects on everything you do. But somehow it seems to never show up anywhere else except for people to walk around in their spaceships.
I like some of the, there are a lot of little visual Easter eggs, so to speak, in the show, like the small bird that's flying on Ceres only needs to flap its wings once or twice because the gravity is so weird. And what's really interesting, and I see there was a close-up on this so that we would notice this, is that when one of the characters is pouring himself a drink or a cup of coffee, it doesn't take a smooth flow down. It takes a little circuitous route to get to the cup.
Well, I think it's one of the first science fiction shows that's bothered to make a little moment out of the Coriolis effect. And that was a consequence of the spin gravity of Ceres Station, where that thing was set. It's details like that that I think that a lot of the fans of the show really embraced. And Ty and Daniel put them in the book, the Scotch deflection in there. And it's one of those nice things that you see over and over again in the show.
Mm-hmm. And you've described space as being a character in this show. Tell us what you mean by that.
It was one of the things that attracted me to the books initially was, you know, that this was an opportunity. As Ty was saying, it's like, you know, every other science fiction show uses gravity so that people can walk around in their ships like they're on, you know, on Earth. Here was an opportunity to have people, you know, living in an environment where unless they were under thrust, you know, they didn't, you know, when there was no thrust, there was no weight. That space is a terribly inhospitable environment to life, and the issues of air and water and just protection from that environment are constantly an issue in the show. Most science fiction avoids it because it's difficult physically to produce people being weightless, for example. The Expanse embraced it, and we've used it over and over again to as much dramatic effect as we possibly can, and we're going to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that bothers me a lot about a lot of the science fiction movies that I see out, whether it's Alien or your program, is we're still shooting torpedoes and chunks of metal at each other and as a bullet. Well, when does lasers happen? You know, why are we still doing that stuff? Why are we shooting people with a ray gun?
Lasers are handy for some things, but they're very easy to deflect. They're very easy to diffuse and rob of energy, whereas a chunk of tungsten traveling at 1% or 2% of the speed of light, there's nothing you can do about that. There is no version of a shield for that. Where a laser could be deflected by just spraying out a high albedo gas and diffracting the laser away. If you put gas between you and a railgun round, it still goes right through you.
Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert coming up about seasons two, which I love season two. It's great. Is that you have scientists now who have been their consciousness, their has been taken away from them, their ideas of humanity and who they are, and all they do is care about themselves and their experiments. Is that a fair way to treat scientists? Is that saying this is how the best scientists are?
I think that was a way to create scientists who were lacking in empathy so that they could make an experiment happen, a brutal experiment happen on 100,000 people and just sit there and collect the data and not feel anything for them.
Yeah, my writing partner, Daniel Abraham, often says that just because something is real doesn't mean it's believable as fiction. So you know, we all know that there have been examples of scientists doing really terrible things to other humans in our past. But when you write down that a bunch of scientists can do an experiment that kills 100,000 people, it feels unbelievable. People don't want to believe humans can do that to each other, so we had to give them an excuse. We had to give them a reason why they would allow that to happen that felt believable to a reader, even though in reality we humans have done that to each other over and over again.
You know, I think that as I listen to the dialogue, I pick out names of real people in it. Or am I just imagining that? Because the one Guy Molinari who's in there, was actually from Staten Island. You know, it was the whole families. Is that you're laughing? Is that on purpose?
Yeah. So again, this is Daniel Abraham, my writing partner. He used to live in New York, and he took the Guy Molinari ferry to work every day. So that was the ferry he rode to work every day. So he named the ship after the ferry.
That was the famous one that I think hit the dock, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that was famous. That was a famous member of the Molinari family. That's interesting. So I'm not making this stuff up as I hear it. Then are there other names in there I thought I had heard? Maybe a baseball player or something.
Well, I'm sure we probably have pulled a few names we know into there.
All right, let's go to the phones. 844-724-8255. Let's go to Anthony in Oklahoma. Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I had a question for you. I was going to say, what do you guys think that the fuel would be used in the future as far as your show is concerned? Would we still be using like a solid state fuel like we're using for our rockets now? Or would we move on to something like nuclear or antimatter?
Well, our ships use fusion drives. So they use a fusible pellet as their energy propulsion material.
Hmm. That's great. And you know what you don't use? Thanks for calling. What you don't also use in the show? What I don't see very much for, and that we would all think would be a progression, are robots, artificial intelligence, something like HAL or Data. The characters are not talking to the wall, waiting for the robot, you know, or the computer to listen to them.
Well, they're there. I mean, it's just that the focus of the show is about the character drama and the geopolitics and a million other things that are going on. Technology is there, but we oftentimes don't focus on it directly. We're not like a techno-porn kind of a show where we kind of glory and you know, indulge ourselves in gadgetry. Mark Fergus, who co-wrote the pilot with his writing partner, Hawk Osby, likes to say, you know, when you get into a car, you don't sit down and say, oh, my God, what a fabulous internal combustion engine this vehicle has. It's you just drive it. And so that's how we sort of approach it. And Ty and Daniel have always said, it's like, we ask the question in the writer's room. It's like, where are all the robots? Where's all the AIs? And they go, well, they're there. You just, I mean, how do you think that ship, you know, maneuvers around in a particular way? It's like, but we just don't focus on them.
Right. Let's go to the phones to Chad in Houston, Texas. Hi, Chad.
Hey, I'm a huge fan of Science Friday, and I'm a big fan of the book. Well, the part of the book that I've read, I've caught bits and pieces, and honestly, I want to get a chance to watch it, you know, in full. But what really struck me about it is kind of what you were saying, actually, with the technology was the it was kind of almost mundane. Like, you know, to us, this is like they're shooting around in space, and it's just, you know, you got to take you know, your acceleration drugs, you got to prepare for everything. And this looks so cool. But to them, it's like, I got to clock in. You know, you never see someone on the Enterprise like, I got to report for my shift. You know, it's always really great. And I felt like that was a really great and much more realistic depiction of what space exploration would be like. And I was wondering if that was intentional, but it sounds like it to a lot of extent was.
Yeah, it's definitely intentional. Daniel and I will often use the movie Alien as one of our biggest references and influences on the show. And the two characters in there, Parker and Brett, in the movie Alien, they're just janitors. They're just mechanics. The fact that they fly on a gigantic mining ship through space is irrelevant. Their job is fixing leaky pipes and wiring, and they complain about how many shares they get of the bonus. We wanted to write about those two guys.
That was done very well. This is Science Writer from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about the sci-fi, that's the sci-fi channel, SYFY, The Expanse, with Naren Shankar and Ty Frank. Any hint you can give us about where this is going at all? I mean, there's this spooky growing thing that we at this point think is alive, but not quite sure. And we're not quite sure if there's aliens involved in this thing.
Well, it sounds like we've got you exactly where we want.
you do. I mean, it's a complicated
thing. When we started in our writer's room, we had lots of questions for Ty and Daniel about where this thing was going, and I had only read like the first book at that point. It's never quite what you expect it to be, but as you go through the show, I think you'll see that there is a logic to what's happening with it. It's just it may not be entirely apparent what exactly it's doing at this point.
Mm-hmm. Naren, you got your start on the Star Trek Next Generation series. Do audiences want more science than they used to?
You know, that's a good question. On Star Trek, it was less about actual science than it was about the sort of the fake futuristic science of the Star Trek universe. I think, you know, nowadays, one of the things that I see people responding to on The Expanse is, I think one of the callers had mentioned it, was it feels more realistic. It feels like this is the way it could actually be. because we have adopted into the narrative everything that Ty and Daniel put in the books about the hostility of the environment, the way the difficulty of getting from place to place, the vast scale that you actually have to traverse to get from one planet to another. You know, and I think that in aggregate, that makes everything feel like, wow, maybe it could actually end up like this.
What I was looking forward to, I haven't seen much of the effort to terraform Mars yet. Have you figured out how that might work? I mean, I know one of the characters says, I thought I was going to see this in my lifetime, but I'm not anymore. Well, I'm hoping, maybe.
I know Ty has figured out how to terraform Mars.
you need a lot of water. They've been sort of strip mining the inner solar system of water sources and carting it all back to Mars for a while.
Well, it's a lot of fun. I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us. Naren Shankar is executive producer for the Sci-Fi Channel, The Expanse. Ty Frank is a producer for the show and co-author of the book series it's based on. Thank you for this series. Thank you for taking time to talk about it with us. Maybe we'll have
our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.